everyone feels that they know what's the best in everybody else's case and situation. It's a shame we can't give ourselves advice, because that is, of course, the first place to give it. And people come to God for thousands of reasons, but few people come to God for advice. Most of us are afraid of getting advice from the Lord. We're afraid to take a chance on getting on our knees and saying, "Now, Lord, here's the situation, and there are several options open to me. Would you please reveal your will and let me know what you want me to do?" Now, most Christians are a little leery of doing that, because they're afraid God will come up with the wrong solution to their problem, and therefore they will not take the chance. Few Christians consult God about decisions that they make, and later on they regret not doing this. But could it just be that the cross of Christ is the main reason people shun God's advice? Now, Jesus went to the garden asking the Father's advice. And he said, "Father, I feel like I know you will, but would it be possible for this cup to pass from me?" The Lord said, "No, no way." So maybe a lot of people shun getting advice from the Lord simply because of what happened to Jesus when he went to the garden to pray. And a lot of people believe that Jesus made one of the biggest mistakes of his life when he listened to God's advice to get himself crucified. Now, I don't agree with that, but a lot of people probably would. And they would probably say, "What a shame that a man with the talents of Jesus just simply threw away his life, and at such an early age, he was only about 32 or 3. Now, what sort of advice would you have given Jesus had he asked you for it? But had you been around that time, what sort of advice would you have given Jesus? Probably somebody gave him the advice, and you would agree he ought to run for Emperor Rome. He could have probably won the race eventually. At least he ought to run for governor of Jerusalem. Some say, "Well, I believe if I had been Jesus, I'd have opened up a clinic. And with all of my healing power, or his healing power, he could have gotten rich overnight. Because he'd have had no competition. I mean, he was successful." So that would have probably been some pretty good advice. You get all the business, you know. Then the third one probably say, "Well, I think he ought to go out and build him a seaside and a mountainside and a lakeside mansion. And just sort of tour around the three." That would probably be the advice. A lot of people are taking that advice for their own life today. A house here and a house there and a house somewhere else, you know. We used to have two cars per driveway. Now we've got two houses. And I don't know what else we'll end up having. A trailer in every driveway. You know, we're going to have to enlarge our driveways and garages instead of our homes pretty soon. And somebody would come along and say, "Well, if I was going to give him some advice, I'd tell him to put on a traveling road show and call it the Jesus the Great. And I would build a program around all the miraculous things he could do. Like, who wouldn't want to come out and see him still a storm?" Just like today, we say, "Well, Lord, I had enough rain. Perform one of your feats, just turn it off." Well, he could do it. And they say, "Well, now, that's pretty good." And then, be quiet, if he turned water into wine, well, a lot of them are like that. And then they say, "Well, let's see him walk on the water." He had a real exhibition, you know. He'd get out there and walk on the water. And he could get some money out of fish's mouth. About income tax time, everybody'd like to see that trick performed. And he could cast out the demons. And you could give him a loaf of bread and he could feed 5,000 with it. Why, Jesus the Great would be the thing a lot of people say that's the route he ought to take. Now, I believe even today people would not advise Jesus to die on the cross if they knew it. Because people today would say this person would be far too valuable to society to just let him throw his life away like this. While with cancer on the rampage and all the other incurable diseases that we have, he would be our only hope until some miracle cure has been found. Let's don't get rid of Jesus, man. Because look at the death rate of disease today. And then also with the population explosion and with the possibility of a few food shortages worldwide, he would be the only solution with what little food we had left, that he could just take it and keep on multiplying. Give him one T-bone, he could make a million. Now that'd be something else, you see. And they say, well, if a person with this ability, we don't want to get rid of him. And then with the weather, of course, catastrophes getting worse, it seems, as the years come, and more frequent, he's the only hope that man has of stilling the storms, stopping the earthquakes, taking care of the hurricanes and so forth. He's the only one that can stop nature's upheavals. With a person like this, the world would probably say, let's make sure he doesn't die in any circumstance. Let's protect him, let's guard him, let's make the death penalty completely void as far as he is concerned. Let's just outlaw it. If there would be one person the world would want to keep alive, it would be Jesus if he'd keep on performing all of his miracles and using his power in the way he did while he was up on this earth. We would demand the best protection for Jesus because we might get cancer. We might get hungry. We might have a storm threatening us off the Galveston coast. And all we have to do is pick up the phone, hey, Jesus, we've got some trouble down here in Texas. And he'd just say, all right, there he goes. Now, we wouldn't want to get rid of a person like Jesus Christ. And you know, man does not view, even today, Jesus dying up on the cross with favor. Still, mankind starts looks upon this and says, man, that was a mistake, as far as I'm concerned. That was a waste, as far as I'm concerned. That was a mistake, and that was a tragedy. For most people, Easter is the big thing, not the crucifixion. People don't normally think about Jesus Christ as crucified. They think about Jesus Christ as resurrected and living, and that's all right. But to most people, they don't care whether Jesus died or not. That's immaterial to them. I guess while I've been speaking, maybe 5,000 people have died. Most people look upon the death of Jesus about like they would look upon those 5,000 just died. They could care less, as long as it hasn't come to their home. They don't appreciate the death of Jesus. They never think about it. They take no interest at all in the entire affair. So a man was hung on a cross by some Roman soldiers. All right. And they forget about it. And they would probably say that Jesus was just a little bit insane for even considering the idea that he ought to go through it. And for most people's sake, you could probably say Jesus could have saved himself all the trouble. He could just forgotten it because as far as most people are concerned, it won't do a bit of good. And it won't bring a bit of benefit. And it'll make no changes in their life. In other words, Jesus, for the majority of mankind, literally just wasted his time. And hung on the cross for nothing. Could he have saved himself a lot of trouble? I guess he could for a lot of people. Some might even say he should have minded his own business. I didn't ask him to die. I didn't want him to die. I didn't put him up there, but they did. But say that I didn't ask for it. He did on his own. He can't blame me for it. And the feeling of the world at large is just simply, I really don't care, preacher. Really, I just don't care. Doesn't make me no difference. I've got my things to do and my job to take care of and my little income to build up. I really don't care. Whether Jesus died on the cross or not, I really doesn't make me any difference. Could it be the world doesn't care because the world doesn't understand? I think that's the reason the world doesn't care. They don't know what he did. They don't know what he had on his mind. They don't understand. And I think the Christians have failed in trying to explain it to them. We haven't even attempted to explain to people what Jesus was doing on that cross. Now, if you mention the word crucifixion, generally speaking, the world's masses think of one name. Jesus Christ. I don't know of any other person by name that was ever crucified on the cross. Now, I know there were thousands, and I know I'm ignorant, but I don't know of one famous person that was crucified on the cross. The crucifixion has lived down through the ages associated with one man, and that man is Jesus Christ. Now, everyone knows what it is to be crucified. They know what it's supposed to be like, what takes place, somewhat of the agony and the pain. But why did he die? What was the point? What did he get out of it? How come God wanted to take place? Surely Jesus had given the matter some thought. If he was going to face the crucifixion, he must have thought about it some.
I'll guarantee you thought about it.
It was on the mind of the Lord, it was on the mind of Christ, it was on the mind of God the Son, even before, now watch this, even before the world and man was even created.
Amen.
Now, I don't understand that, brethren. I guarantee you. So did he think about it? It was on his mind for endless ages. Even before he said, I think I'll make an earth and put dinosaurs and everything else on it, man. Even before he made the earth, he said, I agree to be crucified. Well, there was even a man. Now, that's unusual, isn't it? Look at 1 Peter 1. I didn't make that up. 1 Peter 1. Jesus didn't hatch up the idea down the cross all of a sudden. 1 Peter 1, look at verse 18. For as much as you know that you were not redeemed with corruptible things as silver and gold from your vain conversation, received by tradition from your fathers, but you were redeemed with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who was foreordained before the foundation of the world. That means before you and I came into existence, before Adam was even created, before the world was even made, God the Son knew the day would come he would have to die upon a cross. They didn't even have crosses when that idea came into mind of God. There weren't even any Romans around. It was nothing. I don't understand it. I can't explain it, but I don't understand it. And I believe Jesus often explained to his disciples, or at least mentioned to them, the fact he was going to die. It was not nothing new to him. He knew his mission in life. Look at John 3:17. We're always quoting John 3:16, but look at John 3:17. For God, Jesus is saying this, for God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. Now look at verse 14. How? As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Now what's he talking about? Talking about the cross. Christ was lifted up on the cross. He knew how he was going to die. Now, I believe Satan has really done a great job. He can do good jobs, you know. Yeah, he can have success. But he has had a fantastic success at blinding the eyes of people regarding the matter of life after death. He's done this. And people live as though they're never going to die. This is the thought that runs through our mind from the moment we go to bed at night till we wake up in the morning, we get in the car. We think we are immune from anything that could take our life. We don't even want to think about it. So unreasonable to us. Therefore, man cares, he thinks very little. He cares little and thinks little about the forever. For it's hard for him to get his mind in this channel. We live for the hour. Let the future take care of itself. Have a good time today and forget about tomorrow. But now where man is blinded about the future, God is not. And God sees more clearly than man will ever see. He even sees more clearly than Satan sees. And what God sees, brethren, what God sees in the future of man so burdened him and so caused him grief and so raised within him compassion and pity that God sought a way that he could find for man to escape the future he is destined to live in. God was bothered by this. God was concerned with what was going to happen to man. Man didn't care. God did. The reason is God knew. God had seen. God won't do something about it. And it's not till you come to the cross do you really see how desperate God was to help us. That's where you see it. You say, well, God doesn't really care. Brethren, on the cross, God proves he really cares. He didn't have to do anything. But he was so burdened for what he saw coming ahead that he brought the cross into existence. And there we see the desperation of God to spare man from an awful eternity. That's not the only thing. On the cross, Jesus did two things. You may already know them. I'll refresh your memory this morning. He did two things. On the cross, first of all, Jesus took the opportunity to show mankind what's ahead. And this was done while he hung there on the Roman cross. But he did more than die on a cross. A lot of men had died on a cross. But he was bearing a sinner's cross. And he was going to undergo some things nobody else had ever undergone. And Jesus experienced things on the cross never experienced by any other being before. Not even Satan, not even the fallen angels. He experienced something yet in the future. And when the devil and the fallen angels beheld the horror that Jesus experienced on the cross, even they got upset. Because they were getting a picture show preview of where they were going. And they didn't even know it was going to be long like that. What they heard and what they saw even horrified them. Now, what Jesus experienced on the cross is yet future. It's the final problem or the final punishment or the final state that Satan, the fallen angels, and lost men will abide in forever. We get our picture from Jesus. Now look at Revelation 20. I want to show you it's yet future. You want to upset the devil, tell him about where he's going. Revelation 20. Alright. 1. And I saw an angel come down from heaven having the key of the bottomless pit and great chain in his hand, and he laid hold of the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil, and Satan, bound him 1,000 years. Well, this period hadn't even come yet. This is after the tribulation period. Then the Lord Jesus comes back. When he comes back to reign 1,000 years upon this earth, he binds Satan for those 1,000 years. Now, Satan's bound. Alright. Now, if you will, look at verse 3. And he cast him into the bottomless pit. Now, that's still not the trouble he's going to face. And shut him up and set a seal upon him, and he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed. Alright, look at verse 7. And when 1,000 years are expired, Satan will be loosed out of his prison. Verse 10. He goes out to deceive the people again on the earth. He never learns his lesson. And the devil that deceived the people, now notice, was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are and shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Now there, lake of fire is what Jesus experienced on the cross. Nobody's ever experienced it yet but him. And verse 10 through 15, it talks about the people that shall eventually be lost. People say, well, I don't like to be talking all this lost stuff. Brother, what do you think the crucifixion is all about? Let's talk about the resurrection, they say. No. Let's talk about the crucifixion. Here's where the battle was won for the resurrection. All right. And I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heavens fled away, and there was found no place for them. Well, now, we're here. Everything is just kind of disappearing. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and the books were open. Another book was open, which is the book of life, and the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books, according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and the death and hell. Notice, now hell is delivered up, the dead which were in them. We're talking about hell. And they were judged, every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast in the lake of fire. Now that's the end of it, brother. That's the picture God saw when he said, for God so loved the world, I'm going to send down a rescue mission. That's what he saw. Now you may can erase it from your mind, but God could not. And God said, I don't want man to experience the lake of fire. And so you have the cross. And on the cross, Jesus gives man his first and only idea of what it's like. He also gave Satan his idea of what it's like. And Jesus, when he was in the garden, prayed 3 times the same prayer. You know what it is. We read while I spoke a while ago about it, but look in Matthew 26. Matthew 26, 38. Jesus said, my soul. Now Jesus, in this prayer, was facing the thought of the lake of fire. That would upset anybody, but it doesn't. I mean, you can dangle a man over the lake of fire, he just sits there grinning at you. Not Jesus. Alright. Now what about him? He said in 38, my soul is exceeding sorrowful, even to death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup part from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as I will. And Jesus was facing finally the moment when he would experience the lake of fire. He was troubled. He was burdened. And he was sorrowful. What was in his cup? Well, they contained a lot more than thorns on his head, and a lot more than nails in his hands and his feet, and a whip on his back, and slaps to his face, and spit on his face. It went a lot more than that. There was more in that cup than that. And this cup was so horrible that Jesus drew back in anguish as his drinking it drew near. What was in it? What was in it was the punishment of my sin, and the punishment of your sin, and the punishment of the world's sin. That's what was in the cup. What was the punishment? The lake of fire. God had to endure his own punishment he had created for the devil. Isn't that something? Why? Because of my sin. If he was to save me, he had to experience what I am entitled and due for my sin. Or he had to let me go. And if you don't believe in hell, you got to talk to Jesus. Talk to him. He's the one who tells us about it. And the fourth saying of Jesus on the cross depicts to me what it's going to be like. I hope I never experience it. But I'll tell you what he said about it. That's the only experience I know to tell you about. Look at Mark 15. Mark 15, verse 33. And when the sixth hour, 12 o'clock noon, sun straight overhead. And when the sixth hour was come, what happened? It became 12 o'clock midnight. And there was darkness over the whole land to the ninth hour. All of a sudden, for some unknown reason, the sun went out. It's 12 o'clock, there's no sunlight. Dark as pitch. And it stayed dark for 3 straight hours. During those 3 hours, Jesus experienced the lake of fire. But it was dark. Now let's read on. And at the ninth hour, at the close of the 3 hours of torment for us, Jesus cried, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama abakala, something like this. I don't know what this means. But anyway, I'll tell you what it means in English. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? All right. What does that mean? The word forsaken is a word that all of us are somewhat familiar with, but I think it goes even deeper than we can comprehend. First of all, Jesus was forsaken from all love. All love. There is no love there. Of any kind. None. Can you picture a place where there is no love? Absolutely zero. No love. He was also forsaken of joy of any degree. It's not going to be any laughing in hell. The Bible says it's weeping. Not laughing, weeping. The laughing's in heaven. The weeping's in hell. And you'll never hear anything joyous. Never. Can you picture that? He was forsaken from rest. Brethren, when you have pain inflicted, there's no rest. No rest. Ever. Can you picture that? Just sticking the thorn in your finger. That makes you miserable 10, 20 minutes. But there's no rest. Forsaken from rest. He was forsaken from fellowship. How lonely it must be. There's no one. Just no one to talk to. But it says you're just in darkness. Plain darkness. The night, midday to 9 o'clock, it was dark. 3 o'clock and it was dark. Black. That's the way it is. Blackness. You see nothing. He was forsaken of health. He was forsaken of strength. He was forsaken of all beauty. There's nothing beautiful to be seen. Nothing but blackness. You know how you like a dark room? That's it, brother. And he was forsaken from hope. He was forsaken from hell. That's what it's like. And anything that you would call good, it's not going to be there. Nothing will be there good. Not one ray of sunshine, not one ray of bliss, not one single pleasure, not one second of rest will ever be had. Never. Jesus did not just die and add a picture, the eternal crucifixion of a lost person. And that's really what I believe it is. An eternal crucifixion. It goes on forever. But he also died to provide you and me with a chance not to go there. And that's it. He first tells you what it's like, and then he says, you know, you don't have to go. You don't have to go. Now look at Mark 10:45. Mark 10:45. For the Son of Man came not to minister unto, but to minister and to give his life. The Son of Man came to give his life a ransom for many. What's a ransom? A ransom is a price paid so the captive might go free. That's all a ransom is. What's the ransom price for you and me? The lake of fire. That's the ransom price. Who paid it? Jesus paid the ransom. He said, I've come to be a ransom. While on that cross, Jesus in those 3 hours became my substitute. And he went through what old Billy would have to go through without Jesus. And what every man is going to have to go through that doesn't want Jesus. That's what he did do. In other words, he paid the entire sin debt I owe. He paid all, every bit of it. I won't have to pay one cent of it because he's already paid every bit of it. God's demand for justice was met and satisfied
in the death of his son Jesus on the cross and what he endured for me and for you. For God so loved the world, he did what? That he gave his only begotten son. For what reason? That whosoever believes in him should not what? Should not perish, but have everlasting life. If I will give my life, follow me now. If I will give my life, if I will give my love, if I will give my allegiance, if I will give my heart to Jesus, who is now resurrected, of course, then and only then will his substitution come available and good for me. Only then. He just doesn't pass it out like free tickets. He requires that I give away my life to him, my love, my allegiance, and my heart. And I must volunteer to give myself away to him, to become his property. In return, he'll give me the new life and the escape from what he went through for me. In other words, the old me is done away with right now. The old me has to go. And what comes forth is a new Jesus me. That's what it means now. And a lot of people don't really understand this. Jesus gets something. He gets your life. And that becomes his life. This is very simply stated in Galatians 2:20. Look, if you will, at Galatians 2:20. I am crucified. What's he talking about? Well, there is no longer an old Billy Brunson. It's gone. It's been done away with. I had to give it up. The old me that could do as I saw fit, run around and do what I wanted to, boss myself around, that old me's gone. I had to get rid of it. I mean, that was the price, brethren. That's the price. I had deliberately chunked Billy Brunson away. And so there's no longer a Billy Brunson. Not the one that I used to know, because he said, I don't really do what he wants. I can go to church when I want to, pray when I want to, go to read the Bible when I want to, sin when I want to, do what I want to. I'm my boss. No, not when you give it all away. That's all over. Christians, you don't realize this sometimes. Let's read on though. Galatians 2:20. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I'm still alive. Oh, dead but alive? Man, what can I owe you? Yet not I. No, it's no longer the one you think is living. But notice now, that's not I, but Christ is now Billy Brunson. Christ is now living his life in me. Mine's gone. It's now his. Not mine. Let's go now. But Christ liveth in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I don't know whether you understand it or not. I hope you do. But either you surrender your life to Jesus in this life and lose it, or you'll surrender to the lake of fire in the next life and lose it. You're going to lose it, brethren, one way or the other. See, it's going to be gone. And you can lose it in this life and let Jesus absolutely move in, put his sign above this door, above your home, this bowl belongs to Jesus. It's now mine. The old tenant is dead and gone and buried. Now we got a new tenant. And I'm the tenant. Or you can keep it for yourself. Do whatever you want to with it. But then you'll surrender it one day to the lake of fire. You can have your wish. Only the saved person knows really, I believe, how to rejoice over the Lord's crucifixion. Nobody else will ever understand. Nobody else will ever appreciate it. Nobody else will ever really care. But you see, our hope for heaven and our hope for forgiveness and our hope for life really hinges strictly on Christ having paid the sin bill. I don't want to pay it, brother. I got a lot of bills I don't want to pay. Yeah, you see, but there's one I definitely don't want to pay. And that's the only bill I know of that I don't have to pay that I made. Only one. Every other bill I make, I'm obligated as a Christian to pay it. But there's one bill I made I don't have to pay. And thank God I don't have to pay. I could. I don't want to. And that bill just happens to be what Christ went through. And my feeling is there's no sense in me making Jesus waste his time. I accept the bargain. You say, I don't want to go through. I don't want to go through. And I'm thankful the Lord saw fit before the foundation of the world to even make the offer. I'm amazed that people can walk the streets and reject it. I tell you, that's the greatest bill that you owe and I owe that somebody else has agreed to pay. And any day you walk up to me and agree to pay any of my bills, brethren, I'm going to take you up on it. I don't care who you are. I'll present the bill and say, you go right ahead in faith. And Christ walked up to all of us and said, there's a bill you're going to have to pay. I'd like to pay it for you. I say, Jesus, you've got it. You've got it.